Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of the South Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation out of the South Island, Elgin, Texas. Today is June 3, 2023, or the 15th day of Sivan, 2027. And this would be a full moon also. This would be the day of the full moon, halfway through the month. The new moon is the first day of the month, and the full moon is halfway through the month. It always comes on the 15th of every month, of every new moon. It says, we're going to start our service right there. We'll always have a song, and then we'll have a...
Whosoever will,
whosoever
is, it shall shout the song. Send the blessed tidings all the world around. Spread the joyful news wherever man is found. Whosoever will may come. Whosoever will, send the proclamation over veil and hell. There's a loving Father, cause a wonder home. Whosoever will may come. Whosoever cometh need not delay. Now the door is open, enter while ye may. Yahshua is the truth, the holy living way. Whosoever will may come. Whosoever will, whosoever will, send the proclamation over veil and hill. Tis a loving Father, cause a wonder home. Whosoever will may come. Whosoever will, the promise is secure. Whosoever will, forever must endure. Whosoever will, is not forevermore. Whosoever will, may he come. Whosoever will, whosoever will, the proclamation over there in hell. There's a loving Father, cause a wonder home. There's a record of
home. Going to our space called Track 8, now down to 11,000 B.T. Harap. It says on page 1, it says, for Zion's sake will I not hold my peace, and for Jerusalem's sake I will not rest until their righteousness thereof go forth as the brightness, and the salvation thereof as a lamp that burneth. And the Gentiles shall see thy righteousness, and all kings thy glory, and thou shalt be called by a new name, that the mouth of the Yahshua shall name. Now we're dealing with the Son here. He's the one that stands with the 144,000 of this Lamb on 4 Mount Zion, and he's the one that's in charge. So with which the mouth of the Yahshua shall name, thou shalt also be a crown of glory in the hand of the Yahshua, or the hand of Yahweh the Father. He says, also, and then and a royal diadem in the hand of Yahshua, the Son, Isaiah 62:1-3. So this is this all takes place when Yahshua comes back the second time to take charge and lead his kingdom in the harvesting in the 12th godly hour of all of the earth, including the resurrection, including our clear back to the Garden of Eden. So folks, we got a good time ahead of us. We got a blessed time ahead of us. We're going to see Abraham and all of them, Adam. We're going to meet Adam and everybody out here in this 12th prophetic hour before we go to heaven. This is the idea we got to get in people's minds. The restoration of Eden involves the the resurrection of all the righteous clear back to the Garden of Eden, Adam and Eve. Wonder of the divine love. Creation of the exceeding precious promise that the Yahweh will continue speaking unto her until she becomes a great and powerful and resplendent light in all the world, and a crown of glory in the hand of the Yahweh. For the church is seen standing with the Lamb on the Mount Zion. So when you say the church, actually this is, Adventist calls that Seventh-day Adventist church, that this Lamb, Yahshua, is going to be seen standing with the Lamb, the saints, the 144,000. And yet that's the number one subject that the Adventists turned against. The General Conference got it. All the whole Adventist world turned against that subject, the 144,000. And says that belongs to them old offshoot Shepherd's Rock, and we won't have nothing to do with it. That's where they made their mistake, because they had everything to do with it. It says that for the revelation of the Yahshua as the Messiah, that the Yahweh, the Father, gave unto him for the showing unto his servants things which must shortly come to pass, and he sent and signified it by his angel unto his servant John. Revelation 1:1. You know who these servants are? When he says that Yahshua showed this unto his servants, that was all of those reformers: Martin Luther, John Knox, John Wesley, Alexander Campbell, William Miller, Ellen G. White, and all of the pioneers. They were Yahshua's servants that he was talking about here. He's going to show all this revelation to them. And he's not going to show this to the laity. He's going to show it to the leadership. All the reformers that are leading out during the Dark Ages, and that's what these servants are. But this affirmation that the prophetic events that the John being privileged to record were to come to pass, not before, but shortly after his receiving of the revelation of them, shows that the prophecies of the revelation were to be fulfilled sometime during the New Testament period. Now see, all of the book of Revelation is going to be understood and interpreted and fulfilled here in the New Testament period. So that means before probation closes at the end of the 12th parabolic hour, all of this stuff is going to be understood in the book of Revelation. So starting right now, I'm going to be doing a complete series on interpreting the book of Revelation, starting with Revelation chapter 1. And that's what we're actually essentially doing right now. And I looked, and lo, a Lamb stood on the Mount Zion, and with him 144,000 having his Father's name written in their forehead. And I heard a voice from the heaven as the voice of the many waters, and as the voice of a great thunder. And I heard the voice of the harpers harping with their harps, and they sang as it were a new song before the throne and before the four beasts and the elders, and no man could learn that song but the 144,000 which were redeemed from the earth. Revelation 14:1-3. Prior unto this prophetic event, the standing of the 144,000 upon the Mount Zion, a door was opened into heaven. And the first voice which I heard, says John, was as it were of a trumpet talking with me, which said, come up hither, and I will show thee things which must be hereafter. And immediately I was in the spirit, and behold, a throne was set in the heaven, and one sat on the throne. And he that set was to look more like a jester and a short iron stone, and there was a rainbow round about the throne in the sight like unto an emerald, and round about the throne were 24 seats, and upon the seats of four and 20 elders. In my book says foul, F-O-U-S, is four. 24 elders sitting clothed in a white raiment, and they had on their head crowns of the gold, and before the throne there was a sea of glass like unto crystal, and in the midst of the throne and round about the throne were the four beasts full of the eyes before and behind. Revelation 4:1. Now these four beasts are saints of the Old Testament. These are saints that represented their generation of people in the Old Testament at their point of time. So there's four groups of Old Testament people from Adam down to the cross. And each one of those groups had a representative. And they call him a beast. But he was actually a prophet. Like it says, and when he had taken the book, the four beasts and the 24 elders fell down before the Lamb, having every one of them harps and golden vials full of the old doers, which are the prayers of the saints. And I beheld and I heard the voice of the many angels round about the throne, and the beast and the elders, and the number of them was 10,000 times 10,000 and thousands of thousands, saying with a loud voice, "Worthy is the Lamb that was slain to receive power and riches and wisdom and strength and honor and glory and blessing." Revelation 5:8, 11, and 12. Now this is the judgment of the living. And the judgment of the living didn't start until 2002, Sherman, Texas, Gilead Center. The judgment of the living closed, a dead closed out at Gilead Center. And then the seventh seal opened, Revelation 8, verse 1, and opened up the 12th parabolic hour, closed out the 11th parabolic hour, where it says, "For the Lamb standing at first before the throne in heaven stands later with the 144,000 on the Mount Zion." So when the Lamb stood before the throne, that was for the judgment of the dead, 1844. So when the judgment of the dead period ended, then the Lamb quit standing before the throne, and then he took up his place upon the throne. That's it. The Lamb standing before the throne in heaven. And then after he got through with the judgment of the dead in heaven, he come to this earth, and then he stands with the 144,000 upon Mount Zion and Jerusalem is. Okay, for the Lamb standing at first before the throne in heaven stands later with 144,000 on the Mount Zion upon the earth. See? Upon the earth. Though the elders and the beasts round about the throne remain in the heaven, so correctly to understand this prophetic event in its entirety, we must carefully differentiate the part which takes place in the heavens from the part which takes place on the earth. So the seven lamps of Revelation 4:5 being part of the sanctuary fixtures gives the conclusive evidence that the heavenly throne scene occurs in the sanctuary, whereas the subsequent Zion scene takes place upon the Mount Zion, the king's earthly palace ground, not upon the Mount Moriah, the sanctuary ground, where it would necessarily have to take place were it to denote that the event occurs in the sanctuary. So when Yahshua stands with the 144,000 on the Mount Zion, on the kingly palace ground, is on his last day. It's not up on the Mount Moriah where the sanctuary is at. So it shows that he's done finished his sanctuary work. Whenever he gathered the 144,000 out of the Adventist church, he came and gathered them. He gathered them out of the sanctuary. And then he took them to the king of Palestine, where they were ready now to go to work as soldiers for him after he'd harvested them. Now, these scenes, therefore, are of the two different events in the two different locations. For the sitting of the throne in the heaven and the standing of the Redeemer of the Lamb on the earth, while the activities embraced in the throne scene are still in the progress. Moreover, the statement, I will show thee things which must be hereafter, places the events in the apostolic, antithetical apostolic period, and the statement stood as a lamb, as it had been slain, bleeding in the sinner's behalf, places them in the 12th parabolic hour, the last probationary time. Then from a comparison of the Daniel 7, 9, 10, 13 with the Revelation 4, 2 and 5, 1, already quoted, the fact is clear that both visions are of the same event. For the judgment, as the one reveals, is occurring in the reveals it's occurring in the period of the nondescript beast second stage, after its horn, which had the eyes of a man and a mouth speaking great things, had blasphemed after the reign of the ecclesiastical Rome and before the beast was slain and his body given unto the burning flame. Daniel 7:11. Before the Rome's destruction, and the other vision reveals is taking place sometime in the antithetical apostolic period and within the probationary time of the 12th parabolic, last and 12th parabolic hour that we're in now since 2002. For the Daniel saw the thrones cast down and the Ancient of the Days, the judge said, showing that neither he nor the thrones were there beforehand. Evidently, on the rest of the throne, seats sat the 24 elders, and finally he saw the Son of Man, Yahshua, as the advocate brought before the Ancient of the Days. Accordingly, both the Daniel and John saw the judgment sit and the books open in 1844. And that's Daniel 7, 9 to 11, and for the dead, and verse 13 for the living. And as John saw the 144,000 standing on the Mount Zion with the Lamb after the judgment was set and before it was closed, the event consequently comes neither before nor after the judgment, but during the judgment. And now remember that the John's vision of the Lamb standing on the Mount Zion, Revelation 14:1, reveals the Yahshua as a Savior, whereas his vision of the Lion of the tribe of Judah standing before the judgment reveals him as a King. Correlated, they show that while he is then the Savior, he is at the same time the King of Kings. Okay, it's now being clear as unto when the 144,000 emerged, increased interest follows as unto whom they are, seeing that they are followers of the Lamb, Christians, also sons of the Jacob. They are therefore Israelites indeed, not Gentiles. Whosoever has been converted unto the Christianity, accepting Yahshua as his personal Savior, has had an experience, has completely over throne and revolutionized his former plans and hopes by his entire way of the life. For he renounced the world and all of its pleasures of the sin for a season, Hebrews 11:25, and has become a new creature in the Yahshua, the Son. Okay, it says, born again, heir of the kingdom according unto the promise. And that's the kingdom that is being set up right before your eyes during the 12th parabolic hour. This is what the Yahshua meant when he declared unto the Nicodemus, you must be born again. And Paul, having this experience in the mind, says, if you be the Messiah, if you be the Messiah, this is bad. If you belong unto the Yahshua, then are ye the Abraham's seed and heirs according unto the promise, Galatians 3:29. And actually, the way they wrote it, it says in Galatians 3:29, if you be Christ, then are you Abraham's seed and heirs according to the promise. That we go a little bit better than that. For regardless, therefore, whether one be a Jew or a Gentile, he can have no part in the everlasting kingdom of the Yahshua, Daniel 2:44-45, that is set up in these last days and the days of these kings, save through the second birth, by which he becomes one of the seed of the Abraham. But this spiritual transformation, nevertheless, does not fix anyone's racial identity and tribal lineage, for it cannot, in the other words, make one a Judahite if he is not a descendant of the Judah, that's the tribe of Judah, or make him an Ephraimite if he is not descendant of the Ephraim of the 10 tribes of the north. Consequently, 144,000 being of the sons of the Jacob cannot be of the Gentile nations. They therefore, first of all, are lineal descendants of the Jacob, though not necessarily of the present identifiable Jewish stock. For the 10 tribes, that is the kingdom of Israel in the north, Samaria their headquarters, not Jerusalem in the south. Jerusalem in the south is the headquarters for Judah, the house of David, the tribe of Judah, the lawgiver. For Yahshua sits upon the throne of David at Jerusalem, not Samaria. For the 10 tribes of the kingdom of Israel were carried away scattered throughout the city of the Medes, 2 Kings 17:6, and so completely submerged in the sea of the life of the surrounding nations and assimilated that they were utterly lost sight of racially unto the human reckoning. Similarly, though, as the 2 tribes, the kingdom of the Judah, were carried away into the Babylon, with only a few returning unto Jerusalem after the 70 years of their captivity was accomplished, a multitude also of them lost their identity. Okay, it says, then too, the early apostolic congregation of the apostles was made up of the Jews only. For the apostles, with the 120 in the upper room, Acts 1:15, and the 3,000 who were converted on the day of the Pentecost, Acts 2:41, were all Jews. In other words, of the tribe of Judah, the lawgiver, that Yahshua is come from. As were indeed virtually all those who were added daily. For the first 3.5 years after the crucifixion, Daniel 9:26-27, Acts 2:47, and even after this period was over, and the apostles were commissioned for the taking of the gospel unto the Gentiles, Acts 13:46, many more Jews became apostolic believers, and consequently, as apostolics rather than as Jews, were scattered among the nations. Okay. Clearly, therefore, in each instant, most of the sons of Jacob lost their racial distinction. As the Yashir, however, has ever kept the genealogies of all nations, especially of the sons of Jacob, he will, as he has promised, make mention of the Rahab and Babylon unto them that know me. Behold, Philistia and Tyre with the Ethiopia, this man was born there. And of the Zion it shall be said, this and that man was born in her. And the highest himself shall establish her, for the Yahweh shall count when he riseth up the people that this man was born there. Selah. Psalm 87:46. This just as obvious as strange is the fact that no one today but the recognized Jew can vouch for his ancestry, with the result that the 144,000 can be gathered from almost every nation, kindred, tongue, and people, and yet be of the sons of Jacob. And it shall come to pass in that day, says the word of the prophecy and this connection, that the Yahweh shall sit down again the second time for the recovering of the remnant of his people, which shall be left from the Assyrian, from Egypt, and from Patros, and from Cush, and from Elam, and from Shinar, and from Hamath, and from the islands of the sea. And he shall set up an ensign for the nation. In other words, he's going to set up his flag. And he's going to have the insignia of the Star of David on one part of it, and he's going to have the lion of the tribe of Judah on the other part of that flag, and it's going to show where the lion and the Star of David are joined together as two kings. Yahshua is the King of Kings, and David as a king as well over his people. In the tabernacle of David, for the nations, and shall assemble the outcast of the Israel, and gather together the dispersed of the Judah from the four corners of the earth. And it shall come to pass in that day that the Yeshua will beat off from the channel of the river unto the stream of the Egypt, and you shall be gathered one by one, O you children of Israel. Isaiah 11:11, 12:27:12. Well, that one by one is now. This is what we're going to see right now, before the outpouring of the Holy Spirit on the day of Antipical Pentecost. We're going to see this gathering of one here and one there. But they're going to go tell their people. Each one of these is going to go back and tell their people and get them prepared to come at another point of time. Since therefore history, logic, and scripture combine their evidences for the proving unconditionally that the Yahweh had preserved the genealogy of the chosen branch of the human race forward from the Adam unto the Noah, Matthew 1:1-17, and backward from Yahshua unto Adam, Luke 3:23-38, he must then for a consistent reason also have preserved the identity of the elect today. And this we see is precisely what he has done in his designating the lineage of the 144,000 as of all the tribes of the children of Israel, Revelation 7:4. And though we know not what we are and cannot ever of ourselves tell, for the one who knows all about us, even unto the last hair of each head, knows our precise ancestry, although those of us who are to be gathered from the seed of Jacob are, says the prophet, as the sand of the sea. Whereas, comparatively speaking, the identifiable Jewish race of today is as a handful unto the nation, or as a handful for the nation, and therefore cannot today be the ones unto whom apply the terms Israel, Ephraim, and Joseph. Going back for a moment unto the historical approach and to our subject, we recall that after Solomon's death, the Israelite nation, the 12 tribes, were divided into two separate kingdoms. 1 Kings 11, 11 and 12, 12, 19 and 27. For the 10 tribe kingdom occupying the northern portion of the promised land, which called Israel, also Ephraim, and occasionally the house of Joseph. Israel, because this majority of the tribes, Ephraim, Isaiah 11, 13, because its kings came from Ephraim and Joseph, Ezekiel 37, 16, because he was the father of the Ephraim, that the two tribe kingdom occupying the southern portion was called Judah, because its kings were of the tribe of Judah, and therefore its descendants are called Judah. For the term Israel accordingly often applies only unto the ten tribes. So when henceforth in these pages the reader comes upon the terms Judah, Israel, Ephraim, and Joseph, he will understand precisely who they are designating, and will thus, as we proceed, better understand the Yahweh's plan for the ingathering of the 12 tribes of Israel and for the reuniting them in the one great kingdom. For the kingdom of the heavens, said to Yahshua, is like unto a grain of the mustard seed that a man took and sowed in his field, which indeed is the least of all seeds, but when it is grown, it is the greatest among herbs, and cometh a tree, so that the birds of the air come and lodge in the branches thereof. Matthew 13, 31, 32. Yet the number of the children of Israel shall be as the sand of the sea, that cannot be measured nor numbered, and it shall come to pass that in the place where it was said unto them, you are not my people, there shall be said unto them, you are the sons of the living Yahweh. Hosea 1:10. Hearing of the Yahshua's teaching, then rejecting them and crucifying him, as the Jewish nation brought upon their heads the doom. Let's do it again. Having Yahshua's teachings, then rejecting them and crucifying him, the Jewish nation brought upon their heads the doom that the Yahweh pronounced upon them when through his prophet he declared, you are not my people, and I will not be your Yahweh. Though at the same time, in his great mercy, he let the promise be written in the place where it was said unto them, ancient Israel, you are not my people, there shall be said unto them, ancient Israel, ye are the sons of the living Yahweh. See Romans 9:24-26. So happily the same people, Israel and Judah, who were set aside and scattered, will in that day, our time, be re-accepted and gathered together and appoint themselves one head, and they shall come up out of the land. Hosea 1:11. Having abode many days without a king, their lot from the days of their captivity in the Babylon even unto this very day, for the children of Israel shall afterwards, sometime in the future, says the scriptures, return and seek the Yahweh their father, or seek Yahshua their Savior and Redeemer, and David their king, and shall fear the Yahweh the Father and his goodness in the latter days. Hosea 3:4-5. But as David, as the king of the ancient Israel, had been dead for the many years when this prophecy was made, and as it has never been fulfilled, he was a type of the David to come. Accordingly, it is those who fear the Yahweh and his goodness, the apostolic Israelites in the latter, and a typical apostolic Israelites in the latter days, our time, who shall appoint one head, our king, the antitypical David. Okay, this antitypical David is the same as his antitypical Elijah, Malachi 4 or 5. Same, they're all one and the same person. For a complete study of the Hosea 1 and 2, read our tract number 4, The Latest News for Our Mother. From the clear-cut facts and the preceding paragraphs, we see that the children of the Israel dispersed and without a king these many days are to return not as the Jews, but as the antitypical apostolics, believers of the Nazarene Creed. For this consolidation of the two ancient kingdoms, Judah and Israel, is set forth in the symbolism of the two joined sticks. Thou son of man, says the Yahweh, he says it unto Ezekiel, take thee one stick and write upon it for the Judah and for the children of Israel, his companion, and take another stick and write upon it for the Joseph, the stick of Ephraim, and for all the house of Israel, his companion, and join them one unto another into one stick, and they shall become one in thine hand. Now this antitypical Ezekiel is the same thing as antitypical David, is the same thing as antitypical Elijah. They're all three one and the same. And when the children of thy people shall speak unto thee, saying, wilt thou not show us what thou meanest by thee? Say unto them, thus saith the Yahweh, behold, I will take the stick of the Joseph, which is in the hand of the Ephraim, and the tribes of the Israel, his fellows, and will put them with him, even with the stick of Judah, and make them one stick, and they shall be one in mine hand. Now that's Yahshua's hand. This is Yahshua the Son actually talking. And the sticks whereupon thou writest shall be in thine hand. And so this antitypical Ezekiel, David, and Elijah, they're the ones that all three in one are doing this here operation of these two sticks joining together into one before their eyes, and they, and say unto them, thus saith the Yahweh, behold, I will take the children of the Israel from among the heathen, whether they be gone, and will give them on every side, and bring them into their own land. And I will make them one nation in the land upon the mountains of Israel, and one king shall be king unto them all, and they shall be no more two nations, neither shall they be divided into two kingdoms any more at all, neither shall they defile themselves any more with their idols, nor with their detestable things, nor with any of their transgressions. But I will save them out of all their dwelling places wherein they have sinned, and will cleanse them. So shall they be my people, and I will be their Yahweh, and David, my servant, shall be the king over them. This antitypical Elijah, this David, antitypical Ezekiel. And my servant shall be king, and it's also antitypical Joshua, the son of Joseph, taking Zechariah 3. Okay, and this says, and David, my servant, shall be king over them, and they shall have one shepherd. They shall also walk in my judgments and observe my statutes and do them, and they shall dwell in the land that I have given unto Jacob my servant, wherein your fathers have dwelt, and they shall dwell therein, even they and their children and their children's children forever, and my servant David shall be their prince forever. Ezekiel 37:16-25. Now this is going to take place here in the 12th hour, and it talks like that they're going to be in that land forever and ever, throughout eternity. Well, they are going to be in that land, but that land is going to be taken up like the Garden of Eden was in the beginning. Adam and Eve sinned, they were purged out of the Garden of Eden, and Yahweh took the Garden of Eden back up to heaven. At least that's what we understand a little bit about it. Earlier reading. But this illustrated prophecy scarcely needs to be interpreted, as it is virtually self-explanatory, showing that the two ancient kingdoms, Judah and Israel, for yet be gathered from among the heathen, among whom they have long been scattered, and that they will become again one great nation, a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. Daniel 2:44. Now this is ancient Israel, and you have to read Ezekiel 36 and 37, 38 and 39 to get the full picture of the putting these two ancient kingdoms back together here in the last days. There's four chapters of Ezekiel, 36, 37, 38, and 39. This is for this illustrated prophecy scripture need to be interpreted as this verse is self-explanatory, showing that the two ancient kingdoms, Judah and Israel, will yet be gathered from Mount Eden. Okay. Moreover, said to Yahweh, I will make a covenant of peace with them. And it says, not over. See, Yahweh made a covenant with those ancient people when he created them in the beginning, way back in the Old Testament time. But he says, now I'm going to gather them again in these last days and put them together as one great nation. And he said, moreover means in addition to all of this, I'm going to make another covenant of peace with them. And it shall be an everlasting covenant with them, and I will place them and multiply them, and will set my sanctuary in the midst of them forevermore. My tabernacle also shall be with them. Yea, I will be their Yahweh, and they shall be my people. And the heathen shall know that I, the Yahweh, do sanctify Israel, when my sanctuary shall be in the midst of them forevermore. Ezekiel 37:26-28. Since Yahweh says that he will multiply them when they again become a kingdom, and that the heathen shall know that I, the Yahweh, do sanctify Israel, and since he can neither multiply nor sanctify after the close of the probation, for the two ancient kingdoms must necessarily then be restored and consolidated during the probationary time. Okay, the times of the restitution. It says, for the 144,000 being the first fruits, there must therefore be the second fruits. For where there is the first, there must also be the second. And as the first fruits are the servants of the Yahweh, they must consequently be sent unto all nations for the gathering of the second fruits. So after this, that is the first fruits are the servants of the Yahshua, the Son, they must subsequently be sent unto all nations for the gathering of the second fruits, Isaiah 66:19-20. For the great multitude, Revelation 7:9, that the John saw after viewing the seating of the 144,000, for a detailed study of this subject, the 144,000 and the great multitude, see our tract number 1, pre-11th hour extra, the Shepherd's Rod, volume 1. For the fact that in their mouth is found no guile, Revelation 14:5, plainly goes to show that they are to proclaim nothing but the pure gospel truth, and makes their words as authoritative and as mandatory as the written words of the prophets and of the apostles. Indeed, these first fruits are invested with even greater power and authority, and that they shall, the Yahshua, the Son, defend the inhabitants of Jerusalem, and he that is feeble among them at that day shall be as the David, and the house of the David shall be as the Yahweh, as the angel of the Yahweh before them. Zechariah 12:8. Also in that day, further says Zechariah, there shall be a fountain open unto the house of David, and unto the inhabitants of Jerusalem for sin and for uncleanness. Zechariah 13:1. When this fountain for sin and for uncleanness is finally opened unto the house of the David, the crowning evidence will be seen that the consolidation of the two kingdoms is an accomplished fact, and that the time has come for the proclamation of the gospel in all of the world. That's Matthew 14:12. And it shall come to pass in that day, saith the Yahshua the host, that I will cut off the names of the idols out of the land. And they shall no more be remembered, and also I will cause the prophets and the unclean spirit to pass out of the land, Zechariah 13:2. That is, at the time that this gospel proclaiming kingdom is set up, it will be a church without a guile, free from all idolaters and false teachers. And it shall be fed by the one shepherd, even my servant David. And he shall feed them, and he shall be their shepherd, and I, the Yahweh, will be their Yahweh, and my servant David is a prince among them. And I'm going to do that again. And I, the Yahshua, will be their king, and my servant David, also a king, as a prince among them. Ezekiel 34, 23 and 24. When the Yahshua thus takes the reins in his own hand, this is the Son. When he comes back the second time, he takes the reins, and he's always done this. He did this at Kermit, Texas, starting the Passover 2002. The brother Debbie Johnson, he took the reins out of his hands, and he took them in his own hands, and he brought Gilead Center to a close, and he instated us as the leaders, and he sent us away. He brought us to this part of the country. Testimonies and ministry. Page 300. And again, rules the church. When the Yahshua thus takes the reins in his own hands, and again, rules the church as a theocratic government. Now, this is another thing. This is going to be a church and state. This is going to be a civil and religious government. And Yahshua is going to be the monarch. He's going to be the main monarch, and David's going to be his under shepherd. And this great kingdom. Theocratic government. In the last days, and it says, in the last days, it shall come to pass, it says Isaiah, that the mountain of the Yahshua's house shall be established in the top of the mountain. It says again that the mountain of the Yahweh's house, the Father, shall be established in the top of the mountain, and shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow under it. And many people shall go and say, come ye, and let us go up unto the mountain of the Yahweh, unto the house of the Yahweh of the Jacob, and he will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths, for out of Zion shall go forth the law, and the word of Yahshua from Yahrushua. And he shall judge among the nations, and shall rebuke many people, and they shall beat their swords into plowshares, and their spears into pruning hooks. Nations shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. Isaiah 2:24. You know why? Because the wicked has already been destroyed, and enough but righteous people left. And that's the reason why they said, well, we don't have to do no more, we don't have to do war no more. We don't have, all of our enemies are dead. All the wicked are dead. This is after the war of Zechariah 14, folks. And then this is after the antithetical day of Pentecost. And they said, well, we're filled with the Holy Spirit. We had our sin and iniquity taken away. We don't have to war no more. Let us just be the war commencing the promise and go to farming in the garden and restoring this Garden of Eden. This is where the restoring of Garden of Eden starts taking place. After the wicked are all destroyed out of the land. So with the ushering in of the everlasting kingdom and the consequent restitution of all things, there it is, there shall be on the one hand a great awakening among the nation, scrapping vast stores of war implements which they have for years been laying up. They shall seek to go up and to become subjects of the kingdom and to join the armies of the Yahshua, allowing him to fight for them, while on the other hand there shall be feverish war preparations among those who refuse to awaken, hurling all into a super armament program. They turn even their farm implements into the weapons of war against the kingdom of the Yahshua, his church, Joel 3:9-12, and Zechariah 12:3. Therefore, thy gates shall be open continually, they shall not be shut day nor night, that men may bring unto thee the forces of the Gentiles, and that their kings may be brought. For the sons also of them that afflicted thee shall come bending unto thee, and all they that despise thee, shall bow themselves down at the soles of thy feet, and they shall call thee the city of the Yahweh, the Zion of the Holy One of Israel, Isaiah 60, verse 11, 14. For the further study on this phase of the subject, see the Shepherd Rod, Volume 1, page 173 to 181. For the explaining of the microphone, and as a typical example of how the battle is the Yahshua's, read 2 Chronicles 20, verse 15, 19, 24 to 30. That being far, very far from such high and holy estate, the church must be purified. So it's talking about the Seventh-day Adventist church must be purified. Because she being far, very far from such a high and holy estate, no believers in the present truth of any faith can honestly deny the church's need of the purification. And as the Yahweh sure never does anything without forewarning his church, he is now sending unto her the message of the purification in order for the giving her a foretaste of the future glory, so that as the heavens clearing tall, for the Reformation continues sounding forth among his people, they may have a keen relish for his truth, and may give themselves wholeheartedly unto the work of the reform. Right now, while he is clearly laying before them his plan for the setting up of his kingdom with the consequent results unto the sinners, those who give implicit heed unto the call shall have an irresistible desire for to come fully into the line and to have the Yahshua separate them from sin and sinners. They alone shall receive the seal of the Yahweh, Revelation 3:12, and as the first fruits of the kingdom, 144,000 strong, standing with the Lamb on the Mount Zion, such a state of the holiness will today, just as in the past, cause the dragon to be wroth, that's the old devil, to be wroth with the woman, that's the purified church, also now to make war with her remnant, that's the Gentiles, and all the nations of the world, Revelation 12:17, a conflict which is further described in their words. I saw the four angels stand on the four corners of the earth at the time of the sealing of the 144,000, holding the four winds of the earth, that the wind should not blow on the earth, nor on the sea, nor on any tree. And I saw another angel ascending from the east, that's Revelation 7, having the seal of the living Yahweh, for he cried with a loud voice unto the four angels unto whom it was given to hurt the earth and the sea, saying, hurt not the earth, that's the United States in prophecy, neither the sea, that's the old world away from the United States, nor the trees till we have sealed the servants of our Yahweh in their forehead. Revelation 7:1-3. Here are brought to view two herdings about to take place, one by the winds, the other by the angels, and two commands to the angels, one that they restrain the winds, that the winds blow not on the earth, that's the United States, or on the sea, that's in the old world, nor on any tree, that's any minister, any leader, Revelation 7:1, the other that the angels restrain themselves from hurting the earth, sea and the tree, till the servants of the Yahweh are sealed, Revelation 7:2-3. Since therefore as soon as the servants of the Yahweh are sealed, both the winds and the angels will begin to hurt the question arises as unto what the work of the winds and the work of the angels represent. Radical strife or something else? Question mark. As the nations have always been at war, this twofold work of the herding could not represent political strife, and as the Yahshua said, that at the same time of the end, nation shall rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, Matthew 24:7. It is clear that the herding by the winds and also the herding by the angels, both of which were kept back until the 144,000 are sealed, must be figurative of the holding back of the time of trouble, such as never was since there was a nation, Daniel 12:1. Accordingly, restraining of the four winds is his holding back the image of the beast activity, Revelation 13:15-17. Against the saints, while he is restraining the four angels that they hurt not, is his holding back the execution of his vengeance, Isaiah 63:1-4, Jeremiah 51:18, upon the sinners who trouble the church, the seven living church, until after the sealing of the 144,000 is completed. Being troubled, these two hurtings bring the time of trouble, such as never was. And we're entering into that time of trouble right now. This is where we're at, in the stream of time. Revelation 7:1-3, therefore reveal the twofold conflict, wicked men against the Yahweh, the blowing of the winds, and Yahweh against them, the angels hurting them. But though the blowing of the winds and the hurting of the angels after the servants of the Yahweh are sealed will bring the time of trouble, yet every one that shall be found written in the book shall be delivered, Daniel 12:1. From these facts we see that this time of the trouble is held back in order for the safeguarding of the sealing of the 144,000 servants, lest they, as the very elect, be brought down to worship the image of the beast, or to be killed for refusing to take the mark of the beast. Since in the Revelation all the books of the Bible meet and end, for the Acts of the Apostles 5:85, the sealing of the servants of the Yahweh in Revelation 7 must necessarily be found also in the prophecy. In Ezekiel chapter 9 is envisioned the marking of those who signed God for all the abominations that were done in the midst of them, and Judas and in Israel, and the slaughter of those who do not sign and come, and the fact that the Yahweh has at no time taken the sinners from among the righteous in Judah and in Israel shows that this prophecy of the purification of the slaughter has never been fulfilled. So therefore, as the marking is the same as the sealing, the angel slaying is the same as the angel's hurting. This hurting and sealing that the John saw, and the slaughter and marking that the Ezekiel saw, are again identified as one and the same. For this sealing of the service of the Yahweh is the same that was shown in Ezekiel in vision. Testimonies, Ministry, page 445. Testimony, Volume 5, page 211, and Volume 3, page 267. Although the marking and the slaughter of Ezekiel 9 include only the Seventh-day Adventist Church, Judah, and Israel, the hurting by the winds and the hurting by the angels, Revelation 7, include all of the world, both the earth and the sea, each of which is indicative of a different locality. The sea is the realm of nature, and the realm of nature is the storehouse, home of the waters, is therefore in the realm of the symbols, as the birthplace of the nations in the old country. The earth, the opposite of the sea, is correspondingly a domain away from the old country. It is located under John and the symbol of the two-horned beast coming up, not out of the sea, but out of the earth, Revelation 13:11. For the only place where trees naturally grow, and as according to Daniel 4:20-22, trees are figurative of rulers. Therefore, the trees in this instance represents the ancient men before the house, Ezekiel 9:6, in fact, which reveals that in this period, the church's headquarters are in the two-horned beast's dominion, the new world, the earth. In the light of the clear-cut facts before us, we see that the main object of the sealing, or the marking of the servants of the Yahweh, is for the cleansing of the church from sin and sinners, so that she may be able to stand strong against the image of the beast in the time of the trouble, And that when this purifying work is completed, it shall come to pass that he that is left in the Zion and he that remains in Jerusalem shall be called holy, even everyone that is written among the living in Jerusalem, when the Yahweh shall have washed away the filth of the daughters of Zion and shall have purged the blood of Jerusalem from the midst thereof by the spirit of judgment and by the spirit of the burning. Isaiah 4:3-4. When this special work of the purification of the putting away of sin among the Yahweh's people is accomplished, then the Adventist church is to enter upon her final conflict as the house of David, I might add, and a new movement as the fifth group of laborers, not the fourth anymore, as Matthew 20 verses 5 and 6 points out. Fair as the moon, clear as the sun, and terrible as an army with a banner. She is to go forth into all the world, conquering and to conquer. This is the house of David. This is who we represent right now. The Great Controversy, Tor 25, Prophets and Kings, page 725. And the Yahweh will create upon every dwelling place of the Mount Zion, and upon her assemblies a cloud and a smoke by the day, and the shining of a flaming fire by the night. For upon all the glory shall be a defense, and there shall be a tabernacle for a shadow in the daytime from the heat, and for a place of the refuge, and for a covert from the storm and from the rain, and they shall call them the holy people, the redeemed of the Yeshua, the Son, and thou shalt be called sought out, a city not forsaken, Isaiah 4:5-6, and Isaiah 62:12. This brings the end of our study this hour. Contact us at the 11th hour. Call on us, number 11. Click on our audio archive. We're going to close now with a song.
Work for the night is coming.
Work for the night is coming. Work through the morning hours. Work for the day is sparkling. Work mid springing flowers. Work for the day grows brighter under the glowing sun. Work for the night is coming when man's work is done. Work for the night is coming. Work through the sun. By the stars with labor, yes, come sure and soon. Give every flying matter something to keep in store. Look for the night is coming when man's work no more. Look for the night is coming. Under the sunset star, all the bright tints are glowing. Work for daylight flies. Work till the last infant.